had this little crack. It was like my spine got there. So it was like two layers. So it was like second chakra with her, and then watching the fifth.
Yeah.
And feeling it now.
Yeah. Nice. Nice. And so how do you feel right now?
Like half cooked.
What you're feeling right now is what real feels like?
Yeah.
Because there's a world trying to put you in a box all the time. And I say it sort of in jest sometimes, but it's true. There isn't one person on the planet that wants you to be you. Everybody wants you to be who they want you to be. Doesn't matter who they are. People love you the most. Your children, your parents, your spouse, your whatever. They just want you to be who they want you to be. And so in a way, they're putting you in a box. And when you feel that that's actually what's going on, and you realize that all of those people that are putting you in a box, the only thing that they need from you is actually the part of you that isn't what they want you to be. It creates this sort of like this struggle, this realization that I need to fight for this in lots of different ways. This is one way to actually create space, but you fight for it also by constantly putting out your best. You know, we talked about yesterday, in the big group, it's like, you know, when you get your core, when your chakras are open, you never complain again. It's like there's, you only complain because you're in this battle and you're stuck in the box and you're angry at the box and the chakras are already shut down. So that person's voice, your father's voice, shut down these energy centers. Okay? So that tells you that you can't fight back. You can't do this. There's nothing, and children can't fight back from their parents. This is how we get sort of in this pattern. So what would it be, rather than beating them back, which is sort of like the first piece of it, you have to go into the battle, how do you keep that space open all the time? And you keep the space open by not allowing yourself to fall into that pattern, by doing what you love to do, constantly doing what you love to do. And then you have to notice, and we did the sheet last year, I think I'm going to hand it out again next time, is what your motivation is. And if your motivation is to always be up and always be good and say the right thing and do the right thing, that's just as bad as complaining. Because you're still doing it against the perpetrator, rather than for the fact that right in this moment I feel like this. This is what's in me. And so that's why being able to be in the battle, which we are, we're constantly, somebody's asking something of you,
yeah,
constantly, and then you know, having the compassion for yourself too. I mean, just like the we did the exercise last night with all the emotions, and at the end of it, there was so much more compassion in the room. It just changed the whole energy, the way people talk to each other, because once you realize that we all share this struggle, you know, it's the struggle to be a human being is infinite. There's so many problems with being a human being. You know, we have so many levels of consciousness. We have so many issues. There's so much pressure on us to do different things and to survive. And this is sort of like one of those elements where you have so much more compassion for others when you're willing to really fight and realize how hard it is to stay in your core, because nobody wants you in your core, because it really reflects, it shows them that they're not in theirs. And yet the only thing that's going to make you happy is be in that secret space. Like, how do I do that? How do I do that with people this close? How am I in my secret space? I'm just doing what I can do, even when someone's right here wanting me to be something else. And that's what, you know, that's the practice here. So feeling what you're feeling right now, what if that sort of like, I have to fight for what I am. In a way that I never have before. And what if the fight isn't always the fight? Sometimes the fight is taking a chance on laughing more, joking more, you know, telling her to fuck you with the Kleenex, you know. That's it. That's like a real, like, well, what's it like to just be genuine? That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. Is that feeling okay? Kind of a battle. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just layers, I guess, are lifting.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing it.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, we do, on the third chakra weekend, we do the knockout punch. Have you done the knockout punch before? So it's like the willingness to do whatever you need to do. You know, you all here have one, you know, my goal by the time you finish the third year is to get to the point where we actually can deliver, you can feel, and I can pull out of you and group your big why, your one deliverable. And after that, after you figure that out, that's the only thing you fight for. You stop fighting for anything else because it's just a waste of time. You're fighting for stuff that's not even yours to fight for. And we spend so much time battling the world for things that we think we ought to have and think we ought to be, rather than who we really are. And when you do, it's like, you know, the fight is so worth it. So, I mean, I did 25 years of martial arts, and it's really, you know, teaching yourself how to fight. That's what martial arts is for. It's like none of you should ever try to get in a fight, because once you figure out how to fight, you realize nobody gets out of a fight. And it's not like TV. You know, it's not like bam, bam, and you walk away like, you know, a fight is, you walk away with broken everything. Okay, yes.
I just had a realization as he was talking that the part of the dynamic that I felt that I lost had nothing to do with the actual resisting and fighting. It was when I was told to take my shoes off, and I did.
How was that?
I was told to take my shoes off.
Because they were slippery or something?
I don't know, but I did.
And you just, and you said okay?
But I didn't make that decision. I just blindly, somebody in my space just told me what to do. So I did it.
Yeah, but okay. You said you needed leverage. Mm-hmm. You did say that.
Yeah, but...
So this is also... for you, especially where you were asking about last night, how do I do this? How do I do this? You take responsibility for all your choices.
What's responsibility?
Responsibility was, you see, you unconsciously said yes because you don't always think things through because you're a charismatic leader. By nature, you shoot from the hip. So someone says, you say, I'm slipping too much, or I need some leverage, or, and they say, take your shoes off, and you're just like, fuck that, all right, I'll try that. But then later, you come back and say, why the fuck did they tell me to take my shoes off? Who dare? Who told? No, you're the one. You're the one. What you just said was that this is what I do. They tell me what to do, and I do it.
Right.
Okay? But in that... you're not taking responsibility for the fact that you have these automatic responses to life that has nothing to do with them. They were actually responding to help you.
Right.
And but when you perceive it that way, you perceive them as controlling you.
I see. Got it.
You understand?
Yeah.
And that way you lose control. That's, and what you're after is, how do I keep my chakras open? Well, you have to realize that I'm in charge of everything.
Even following their instructions.
Even when I choose not to pay attention and let them tell me what to do. I do that. Wow.
That's why it's so difficult to surrender to a process like the chart. You know, right. It's so difficult to surrender to working the chart because it's like I'm in battle with everything, you know, as a charismatic leader.
Right. And the charismatic leader is very much about you making me, you know, it's like they're externally focused, right? The knowledgeable achiever is internally focused, right? So they know it's always their problem. Oh. Could have done better, should have done better. They're very internally focused. Charismatic leader always looks for the problem out there. I've got a problem in here, it's you. It's you. It's you. It's definitely not me, because when you're not bugging me, I'm good. But not everybody's feeling what you're feeling. You're dealing, so that's the piece for you, is to sort of take full responsibility. And when an enforcer turns into a charismatic leader, the difference is total responsibility for their actions. They never blame anybody else for anything they're doing. They will die for their cause. So their mission, they're on all charismatic leaders, whether charismatic leader or enforcer, are on a mission. but the enforcer is on a mission against, and the charismatic leader is on a mission for. And so it's just noticing. How often do you, that was just very subtly, you just blame somebody else for why you took your shoes off. And it was like, why do I do that? And then the question is, you made an instant choice, which is what a charismatic leader does. Boom. I make that choice, I decided to do that. That doesn't even cross my mind now as a bad choice. Because actually, if you talk to charismatic leaders and you ask them about their bad choices, they're like, that wasn't a bad choice, I'd do that again.
It was a perfect call.
Right? What? You know, hell. You know why I was a good choice? Because I did it.
It goes perfectly with a spiritual mass too, because then you say, well, I was supposed to do that.
Right, exactly.
That's the expression, no regrets came.
No regrets came from a charismatic leader. All right, what else? What else in the exercise? What else came up for anybody? Yeah.
So I asked for Angelo because I had a lot of big Italian bullies in my life. And I was little. I went to school early, and I was smaller than everybody to start with, and I'm not a big guy. So I lifted weights to compensate, but I was never tough or big.
Yeah.
So I made that represent the bullies, and I made it represent everybody in my life that ever tried to keep me down, teachers, priests, whatever, you know, Catholic school, the whole thing. And his voice was perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Because it's such a perfect Italian voice. I don't work with Evie, too. No, in East.
Yeah. And so
everybody in there.
The funny thing is, the bully that I had in mind that I needed to resolve, to work through, I saw him this morning. I drove by him, and I haven't seen him in I literally drove by him, and I was like, oh, shit.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Lucky for him, it wasn't after.
Nice. Yeah, and the universe always provides, right? It's always like, oh, yeah, little accent to it.
I always get the little exclamation point. Now.
Yeah.
Like, boom.
Yeah, so we think, and I think that you did it with your success, with money, with that sort of stuff, and we try to find a way, we get a partner or something that seems like it's going to protect us. You know, there's something that I do, my success will do that, my money will do that, my stature, my whatever it is, and it never does, because internally, we're all like the Jolly Green Giant. We're all like 80 feet tall. You know, this battle that goes on between people is always just so below us. It's so pathetically, you know, ego-driven and unconscious. And when you really understand sort of where you are, you needed those bullies, you know, to sort of teach you to have compassion for other people rather than harden you up. You know, and then decide, I'm going to be tougher, I'm going to be, you know, those bastards are going to work for me someday. You know, that kind of thing, rather than, you know, nobody gets my soul. Nobody gets my soul is infinitely powerful. And it's got this beautiful space. You know, even if the people are right here, it's like, ain't going to get this. All right, yes.
That was a really hard exercise. I don't even have my voice back yet.
Yeah.
When Angelo first started, and when I was watching him with other people, it was really hard to watch. I broke down. I couldn't. It was just a ton to handle. It was really hard. And then when I went up, at one point, it was part that I can't do this. I'm going to give up. And then it was walking back down again, and
nice.
Taking it back. Like, no, I'm not going to give up. But that was really hard to do. It was just really hard.
Yeah.
Incredible feeling after it was all done.
Incredible, right? To fight for yourself.
Yeah.
And it's just a metaphor that we're creating here, but this is what it feels like. And so, you know, what Mike was just saying, it's like, what if everything we offered you is an opportunity here? And I can tell you that there isn't one thing that we do in the school that isn't totally thought through and dovetails with everything else, and it's all designed to get you to your core. What if you had that same fight around your chart, like, I am not standing up until this thing makes sense to me. I will not let this go. I will not, you know, skip the reading. I will not, or even if, or whatever you got, if you only have 10 hours to do something or 5 hours to do something, you do everything you possibly can because this is for me. This is my thing. This whole school is about you. It's like, how much do you fight to get out everything you possibly can out of it. How much do you call your classmates and talk this stuff through? And because this owning this core quality inside of you, you know, that's what we're after. It's not just your space. It's not just, you know, I mean, you all need to get some people out of your lives, right? You all need to, there's people that you keep too in battle with. And you have to really fight that urge to be incredibly resentful. You know, when we do the, we're going to do the What Do You Want meditation again tomorrow. In the third year, you do it every weekend so that you really work that through. But there'd be things that tomorrow when you do it, I know you did it last year, where you're asking your parents to love you a certain way and be a certain way with you that they just weren't. And you're going to have this thing that comes up in your head tomorrow. It's going to be like, yeah, I couldn't ask for that because they never would have done it. And the only reason you say that is, it's your world, right? You can create anything you want, but there's this huge resentment that things didn't go that way. And now, if I were to live in epic forgiveness, which would mean no more resentment, none. Everything that happened to me was exactly what was supposed to happen. It was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And now it's taught me all these things. Power, compassion, love, you know, intimacy. It's taught me the value of what's important to me. That's what those people taught me. That's what those, and I mentioned over there, the person doing this pushing, okay, energetically, Carolyn Mace has a beautiful term for it. She calls it your noble friend, okay? Now, the noble friends in your life are actually really unconscious assholes that are hurting you, okay? That don't perceive you as any value because they're so shut down. They're in that, what we talked about yesterday, the evil. Okay, that the most evil thing that people do is they shut down their they stop their own feelings, which is called a vow. Okay, and when they're in a vow and they can't feel your feelings, and if they can't feel your feelings, then they can inflict cruelty, which is the third level of evil. Okay, on you without feeling it, and that's all evil is. All evil is somebody with a vow shuts down their feelings, can't feel your feelings, so don't care about you, dissociate from you. Right? And then when they're dissociated from you, they can actually see you as such a problem, they're going to enact actual cruelty. Yeah?
So yesterday you were talking about that if somebody's wearing a mask that they may say, oh, I forgive my ex and I've done the work and I'm in...
Such a beautiful thing when they do it.
So how is that not mutually exclusive with the epic forgiveness?
So...
How does that relate?
So epic forgiveness has to do with healing, okay? It has to do with being healed. So epic forgiveness is, you can't even remember it happening. See, when someone says, oh my God, you will believe my ex, it was this terrible thing, and it's like, but I've forgiven him. Like it's some sort of badge you wear. It's fake. When you say, how was your life? It's like, oh my God, it was amazing. It was amazing. Even my first marriage, which was nutty as hell. You wouldn't have believed how crazy my first marriage was. But you know what? It taught me everything I needed to know to make my next relationship. But when you forgive them and you're angry at them, you just create the same relationship again and again and again and again. And then you forgive all of those assholes too. But it's not them at all. You brought into your life the part of you that you'd rejected, the asshole part of you that you were like, I'm never going to be an asshole.
So is the difference that one is forgiving yourself rather than forgiving?
One is living in the present moment. Epic forgiveness is right now in this moment. When that ball plays and you have that sort of like that, oh my God, that was so good. Keep playing that. Where's your ex? Nowhere. Right?
Mine's internalized, so I'm working on that.
Oh, no, I get it. But when the ex is alive inside of you, you're going to feel the ball as pain.
Right.
Okay, and you can say, God, this is my heart chakra. My heart chakra is still, you know, against this. So epic forgiveness is that, I think about it this way, just in healing work. I had chronic back pain when I was going through my 20s and 30s. And part of it was digestion. Part of it was I was, you know, a 40-hour on the court tennis pro. I was also doing martial arts 5 times a week. So was I pushing my body? Yes, but it wasn't one of those things. It was like I'd go to the chiropractor one day, And it was, he'd be like, I've never seen you any more aligned. This is, you're nailing it. And I'm competing and I'm fighting and whatever. And then the next day, my back goes out. I'm laying in bed for a week. It was like I had this chronic thing that was going on inside of me. And it was totally emotional. It was totally around my life. It wasn't, had nothing to do with my body. You know, it's all this stuff. And now I can sit here with no fear of talking about my back. Like it could ever come back. It's like it was like something that never happened. It was like such a non-event. Whereas when it was when I was at that lower level of vibration and consciousness, it was a constant fear. God, what if I lift too much? What if I do this? What if I, you know, what if I somehow, you know, I eat the wrong thing or I do this? It's like, you know, and now when my back gets sore, it's like, that's weird, my back's sore. Same thing with all the other stuff. When you increase your vibration, you don't even remember why you would be upset about something. That's epic forgiveness. Epic forgiveness isn't something you can do. It's something you become.
So you're embodying.
You're embodying the present moment. To be in the present moment, there's like infinite possibility. And you would never go back in the past and drag some crap up into the present moment when you got all this stuff right here. This
so
is so...
It's not like something lucid that you're going to...
It's a byproduct of raising your energy field. Yeah, yeah. None of you are trying to attain epic forgiveness. What you're doing is you're working on freeing yourself from these stuck chakras, which keep you at a low level of energy. Yeah.
So
wait. You two are doing all this talking. What does anybody else have anything else they want to say? Yeah.
In the middle of the exercise, I felt, I can't. That is strong for me.
Yep.
I came with, is scare me. I felt you share with me, with us.
Yeah.
He pushed more. I said, oh, no. That's, it's okay. And finally, I pushed, and I felt really freedom.
Yep.
Very shaken. Oh, second and third. Shaken. All my energy is like a vibrations.
Yep.
But my question is why it's so difficult for me to put my boundaries to.
Well, think about it. When you were a child, yeah. And you're little, and you know, parent says you got to come to the kitchen table. You got to do this. You got to, you know, and whatever they told you to do, and you're like, and basically you're saying no fucking way, you know, or you're like. And they're like, no, you don't get to do that. You don't get to say no.
I know.
And we're all taught that.
Yeah, how you put out that memory? Oh my God, that is
so that's a subconscious memory, so it's one of the harder ones. So that's either first or second chakra, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's why we do this in the second chakra. This is like this fear to do that. You know, and you just have got to, you know, you have to consciously, you know, notice that you have to be pushed to your limit before you fight back. And I can tell you that I was like that because I was a super thinker rule keeper, right? I did all the charismatic leader things, you know. I did the drugs, I did the, you know, the partying, I did it. I did all the bad shit, okay? But I lived the life of this thinker, rule keeper. You know, I was the golden boy. I played tennis. I got the scholarships. I was that sort of thing. You know, mm-hmm. but that sort of holding it together and not feeling it. It was like, you know, and I would actually get in fights in high school. Not a lot of them, but they didn't come. You know, I couldn't just like snap and fight because it was on. It was almost like we had to plan this thing. I'm meeting you after school. We're gonna be, we're gonna get it. Like somehow, this is like, you know, this is a prize fight. And so I even that I couldn't. I was so angry at somebody, and I was like, you know, we gotta work this through. That it had to be done later. And now, like, you'll there's certain things that really trigger me. Anybody messes with any of you, I'm so. So it was like never again, you know. And you just have to recognize that you have to feel when you're about to give up your soul. You have to feel when you're about to surrender something that's incredibly valuable to you. And the problem is that because our chakras are shut down and they've got vows in them, we can't feel the real value in it. Mm-hmm. When it's open, it's like when you have that moment, and we practice these, and you feel this, and you do the creator meditation, and you have that love, you know, that whatever it is that you're doing, it's like, you know, I my favorite, you know, emotion is that sort of universal kind of just pure just joy of love and connection. And I use that to create anything I want to create. I'm not just better relationships, but just love. And because I've practiced that daily, weekly, monthly, I'm really familiar with it. And I realized that I can actually hold that emotion even in almost everything that I do, when I'm speaking, when I'm, because I love that, I love creating through that energy. And so when I'm doing that as a practice, as a discipline, I can really feel when I don't do it. You know, when I let somebody or somebody shocks me, and it's always one of your charismatic leaders. I'm always like, how the fuck did they go there? You know, how did we get to this place? And then I'm like, okay, you know, and it's like done. We got to, you know, let's you know, let's, and I come back. It's like boundary time. Now let's bring this back to where it's going to be. Whereas rather than oh, I can't deal with this. No, some things have to be dealt with right now, and noticing that you couldn't fight to begin with, you thought, I'll never be able to do this, and then finally he pushed you just to that limit. And we all have our limit. We all have that place where we will fight back. The problem is it's almost always too late.
Yeah.
Right? So learning how, it's tricky. It's tricky because some people have the hair trigger, and they never let anybody in far enough to find out whether it's a good relationship or not, or whether it could have been worked through. So they have the hair trigger, and other people don't have any trigger, right? So they hold off, you know. So whatever your defense is, does that make sense? So learning how to feel, so much of what we do in the program is learning what a yes feels like and what a no feels like. And that's unique to you. And for one person, someone doing something's just like, no problem. That's the way my dad was. You know, for somebody else, because that's a yes. A yes is like, yeah, people work through things this way. You know, I remember in East Boston, they called it, and this is all my Italian buddies in Winchester as well, but really in East Boston, it was like, you know, they talk about having a beef. Now, beef can mean they actually punched each other in the face. Right? And kicked each other, you know, and threw them down, and somebody hit each other with a bat. Yeah, we had a little beef. And then they're like, yeah, we figured it out. We worked it through, you know. And that's like, they can put up with that, you know. But, you know, the average person, that's life or death, right? So where's your edge to that? You know, how do you make that choice? And you have to make that choice. And you don't want to be super sensitive. You know, and you also don't want to be numb to this. You have to kind of feel your way through it. Everything's in the present moment. So that's the epic forgiveness too. It's like, you know, I can forgive myself for waiting too long.
Yes, sometimes it's anger because you can't express something. So, for example, someone hurt you, and that moment you can express, and after you go and thinking, oh, why I don't stop, I don't tell.
Right.
Oh,
well, you were just dealing with this with your ex, or with your guy over
yes,
in Spain.
Absolutely.
I mean, how long did you put up with that shit? Right? I mean, that's it. And it's because we're supposed to be good people. We're supposed to give people the benefit of the doubt. We're supposed to, but at some point, you give everybody the benefit of the doubt, and they're like, okay, now I'm doubting. Done. Let's set a boundary. I'm not going to play this game anymore. You know, and being able to say no, you know, and remember, no is never no to you. It's always yes to me. If I'm saying no to you, now I'm in some way have to get that forgiveness thing. A no to you is like, I'm going to have to forgive you for being an idiot later. But when I say yes to me, I'm allowing you to continue. This is detachment. When I say yes to me, I can say, no way, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. We've got to stop. because it's really, and I can, and you can feel that it wasn't about you. It's just like, it's me. I have to stop. I have to stop doing this. This has to stop for me. The other person doesn't have to go. They're not going to get back in a battle with you when you say no, because they realize it's like, okay, there's like a really firm no internally, rather than a no against you. A no against you. That's what salesmen are always looking for. Salesmen want the person to say no. No to you. Don't mess with it. Because as soon as they engage him, they got him. It's a game now. Okay, what do you mean no? Why don't you, you know, really? You don't want that? You don't really want something good in your life? You're like, well, I didn't say no to that. You know, it's like, you know, so they hook you. You've got to learn that internal no, which is a yes to me. All right, anything else from this?
Thank you.
We good?
Yeah, what's the tie into the friend or foe with this fighting out of the family?
It's all the same. It's all the same. So friend or foe, you did friend or foe last year.
Yeah. No, yesterday.
Oh, yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
That's why I'm asking what the tie is.
Cause friend or foe,
we actually do have, this madness does have like an interconnection between
Days. Yeah, so friend or foe, friend or foe, because you're blindfolded, creates this illusion, this idea, and not illusion, but the experience that random things can come and hurt you in your life. And when you're not on guard, it hurts a lot more. And so after you have had one really bad experience in life where you've been invaded or hurt or really just like somebody whammed you with a pad and it's like, holy shit, or you fell down, you hurt yourself, whatever it is, you know, from then on, you're going to immediately hold, from then on in your nervous system, you're going to hold you're going to be waiting for that to happen again and protecting against that. And so it's like it's happening all the time. You're always on guard after that. You can't go back to peace. It's exhausting, right? And people don't even realize that's a lot of their stress. So think about what a vow is, right? A vow says, I can never share this quality within me. And now it's the only thing you want to share, right? And so you're afraid. So you were abused. There was some sort of insult to that chakra. And this person, that's what an abuse feels like. It could have just been they left you alone, you know, and you felt lonely in the heart. And you're just like, I vow to never, you know, trust that anybody's going to be there for me again. You know, or whatever that is. And that's the battle. All right? So that energy, you know, is holding a fear inside of you. And that fear creates anxiety. Okay? So your vows, by their nature, create the anxiety, because the greatest anxiety that you will ever have is the fear that you're never going to be able to be yourself. Never going to be able to get your needs met. All right? And now, of course, the problem with a chakra closing down is that it stops feeling. And so now you can't actually feel what your needs are. You just know you have them. Your soul knows you have them. Your core knows you have them. But you can't, your chakra can't actually feel where it is in the world anymore. And so that creates a constant anxiety. All right? So this is sort of at the energetic level. At the base, just at the metaphoric level, which is the friend or foe, Once you get violated, you lock down, you lower your energy, you bring it down to the ground, and you can't enjoy the hug. So what happens? The person comes to hug and you hit them. Because like, no, anybody who comes near me now gets hit. And so it's really difficult. And then someone says, I want to hug you. After a few hits, your hugs were still like, oh, thank God this is a hug. But when's the hit coming? And that's what relationships get like, right? So this is this whole, this is really sort of taking it to the next level, where you're going to have to actually take action, you know, to establish this safe space for yourself, this who you really are. And that means taking action, doing what it takes. What does it take to open your chakras? I don't know. I give you a thousand ways to open your chakras. You have to try them all and discipline them until you figure out which ones work for you. I know which ones work for me, you know. There's all kinds of those exercises, you know, the movements, the martial arts movements, the the chi stuff, that I love the meditations, you know, and using soul emotion. As soon as you have a soul emotion, your chakras just go, ah. But you got to know the difference between your brain emotions and your soul emotions. So, and that means you have to do the work.
So that bottom line, the bottom row in the chart that says goal to balance, he does martial arts. I'll sit there for 30 minutes every morning for the last 5 years and hyperventilate and hold my breath. That's my thing. I fucking love it. Anybody else want to do that? I mean, it's like you guys got to find yours that opens up your energy system. Each one of you are different. But do the work to find that amazing piece that makes you feel alive. And then get it in there, note it in that bottom row of the chart that says, this is the activity I use to balance this particular chakra, right? I mean, each one of us have different things. It's like, oh my God, I mean, you know, I get up 40 minutes to 2 hours every morning, even if I slept 5 hours the night before. I would not recommend that for anybody. You know, what's some of the stuff that you do? I mean,
one of the things I do is I often have to get up and pee at 3 a.m. and that's like perfect meditation time.
3 a.m. meditation time.
Three to four in the morning is when your melatonin is at its highest. So you're going to have your highest level of consciousness at that time. Okay, it's also the quietest time in our space, right? So I'll do that. The other thing that really works for me is like, as much as anybody would watch it, it'd be like, oh my God, you're insane. Getting ready for class, doing one of these things, like getting ready for one of my Facebook Lives, doing one of these. So a creative, any kind, because I'm a creative idealist, right? Any kind of creative process and a secondary of knowledge of a charismatic leader, right? So any creative process that I can do that I can then share publicly or inspire people with, that opens all my chakras. You know, it's like I've got problems, I got pains, I got this, that. All I got to do is sit down and do this creative work, and all of a sudden my body's feeling great. And I'm realizing that it's like it's because when I was in my sort of daily grind, that's really hard for me. I hate the daily grind.
And so when Reese talks about that, that's what the creative idealist does. So each one of you have a profile. When you find that profile, then you go, oh well. The charismatic leader loves to wrestle, loves to play, loves to battle, but then what are we battling for? Are we battling against or battling for? And so each one of the profiles that we teach in here has a specific way. And so, you know, it's like you guys want to try what Reese does, you know, get on Facebook and start talking or do what I do. It's like it's not going to work for you unless it does, but each one of your profiles, you've got to find your own. It will give you lots, thousands of ideas.
So this
right?
is why I know, like, you've been talking about feeling overwhelmed by how many things we're throwing at you. We want you to find what works for you. So we're giving you little pieces of everything. Figure out what works for you and make that your spiritual practice. Make that your daily practice.
Yeah.
You need to find what works for you.
We're not like gurus that are saying this is the path. We're giving you a whole bunch of different things,
yeah.
A palette.
And certainly you're not going to do them all, but you're going to find you have to do them all as prescribed to figure out how they work. Okay.
But once we open all of our chakras, are you saying that like past stuff, past traumas won't affect us as much because it won't matter, right?
So here's the deal. Okay. here's the deal. Chakras' jobs are to open and close. Okay, they're constantly opening and closing. They open when they see that there's a need, and they close when they can't get the need done. So they're constantly opening and closing. The part of you that never changes, that's unbendable, non-negotiable, I say it over and over and over again, the part of you that's unbendable, non-negotiable is that life purpose line in the soul. The soul's like diamond hard. Okay, so the soul, when you actually access your soul, first of all, it's so infinitely, it's like bigger than the universe, right? It's like the universe is this big compared to your soul. So when you access that, and it's diamond hard, it's like this pure, unbendable consciousness, okay? Then we come into this universe, and we come in with this life purpose line, this gravity line. That gravity line is the pure intention of that diamond soul. So the soul, that diamond, creates an intention that's diamond hard as well. But it's only one intention. It's like one thing you're supposed to do. And so you don't open the chakras And now I'm open, and now I'm enlightened. This is the illusion of enlightenment. We're taught that the enlightened masters were enlightened all the time. They were dickheads too, just like everybody else. But they had moments of where they were able, and more moments than the average person, where they could open themselves up and live in their core quality, which is where healing exists, where the pure essence of what they're here to do on the planet existed. And of course, they were here to be spiritual masters, right? And so they were able to hold to that, which allowed them to also be sort of looked at as deities or whatever, because they had these, you know, higher levels. But your goal isn't to, the goal isn't to open the chakras. The goal is to let the chakras open, you know, at, you know, like be resilient, be open, and when they're open, you totally are knowing that the only thing that comes out of my chakra should be this core quality within me. This is why the profiles are so important. This is why your chart is so important. You don't know what it is until you've really researched it. Every archetype you put in there, every lower self quality, higher self quality you put in there, is teaching you the energies in that chakra, the you know, the intention of that chakra. So yes, I can just easily say right now, what would my creative idealist do? And that's going to open my every time I say that, I'm like, bam. But I also know that I have the magus, or the spiritual taskmaster, in my first chakra. Okay, so if I'm in some sort of family situation, I want to be pushing the person's envelope as to where, how deep can they go into their spirituality, right? So, and each one's different. If I'm you know, sort of sitting by myself and meditating, I've got my saboteur, you know, and my child in my sixth and seventh chakra. This is where it all happens. My most energy and my greatest opportunity. My greatest opportunity is that I download shit that nobody else has ever thought of, and my child is open to doing something playful and amazing with it. Okay? And then it, you know, goes through all the other chakras that are in there, but they go down, finally gets down to that first chakra. If I'm gonna put it on the ground, it means I gotta share it like a teacher. I gotta lead someone into making that new idea something better. And now I know that when I say, what does my creative idealist do, I know that's the sequence. I know how my chakras work because I've done the research and I've done the work to figure them out. So, and when you have that, at the end of this, you're not going to look at your chart and say, wait, I don't know how to respond to you. Let me check my chart. It's all a gestalt feeling. It's like your core, that life purpose energy, that profile quality within you is something that you have in your secret place. It's just the truth of you. And then when you do that, the chakras stay open because that power is, you know, is your secret place. It's that nobody can take that away from you, right?
And then the past won't matter, right?
And then the past disappears. You're in the present moment. When the chakras are open, you're in the present moment. Now, of course, we all have to go in the past to remember that. Oh yeah, this I you know, overspent that. I overdid this. I didn't manage this that well. So we have to go back and think that through and think about the future. But we can't live in those places. That's where the mind is really important, to get you there on time, to keep track of whatever it is. We know we had class this morning. You have to get here. Yeah. We have to, right. The brain is, that those kinds of memories are important. We have to understand what we live within in the lower chakras. But our purpose is a quality of being. And when you're saying, what does opening the chakras mean? Opening the chakras means understanding your purpose. Understand that that's where all the healing comes from. You live forever in the moment. Okay? You die every moment when you're living in the past and the future.
Reese, you just said that you have your saboteur here?
Yeah.
So what do you do with it?
My saboteur? Yeah. Well, keep in mind, the saboteur is your greatest, your highest potential. So it's called the saboteur, but we call it, what's our name for it? It's the your greatest gift, right? You're like, your greatest gift is the saboteur. So my seventh chakra, being a creative idealist, that's going to be, my upper chakras are going to be my biggest chakras, right? And so my saboteur means that I get ideas. Like this idea that I shared last night. Okay, that was a whole new world. Nobody is going to buy that in the world of healing. Because they're like, what do you mean? Healing's healed. you're telling me that healings don't heal, or, you know, I tell that to a psychiatrist, and they're gonna be like, yeah, really, that's not how the brain works. We know how it works. It's got electricity. It does this. It's got these neurons. It's all memorized in the brain. I'm like, what if the brain doesn't think at all? What if the chakras think for the brain? Okay, now, I wasn't going to share that this weekend. I came up with it last week, and of course it was for this weekend. But I was like, you know what? It's too busy. I don't have time to fit it in. I really didn't have time to fit it in last night. It was almost too much, right? But there's, and then by the time I get around to it, I'm on to something else. And so these ideas that come in, I have to share right away. Because I'm already on to something else. The next thing's already on its way. It's already waiting at the door. And I know in my system, because I'm a leader, I have to get it out before I totally get the next download, or I just let it go.
Do you see how it sabotages?
And that's a massive sabotage, because that could have changed, that can change every one of your lives totally. It can make you realize how important energy work is. Where right now, all of you are still questioning it. You've all had a great experiences with energy work, but there's also a piece of you that's like, yeah, is this stuff real?
So is there something that you tell yourself, or is there a way that you manage that for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I'm aware, you know, that, you know, I love, first of all, at this point, I know when I'm getting download, okay? It's like, because right before I get it, I have this huge anxiety, this huge sort of like, you know, like something's crazy.
Something's coming in. Something's that's going to shift his world. And it shifts his reality and right. His comfort zone. And he has to like,
and sometimes,
whoa.
Yeah, sometimes I'm getting pissy. Sometimes I'm getting angry about something. Sometimes I'm frustrated. Sometimes, you know, people that normally don't bug me at all, I'm like, that person's really pissing me off today. You know, it's like something. And I kind of know, this is something's on its way in. And then I start listening. So you get to know your field. You get to know how you operate in the world. And you stop looking at the emotions you have, like last night. All those negative emotions are precursors to higher states of consciousness, right? Because they're what you were going to choose other than a higher state of consciousness.
But we're not going to, if we're sitting with the blindfold on, hypervigilant, waiting for the next assault, we're not going to be in that place that he's talking about. It's like, I'll defend it, you know,
Right, so what are you defending? Are you defending that core quality that you've now studied through feeling, not through mind? All of you can figure out who you are. We could talk it to blue in the face, but each one of you is going to discover something that no one else in here can ever discover, which is what it's like to be you. And then you've got to fight for that. And everything we do in the school is around feeling who you are. I don't want you to feel what a second chakra is. I don't give a shit about second chakras. I want you to know what your second chakra does. Because then you'll have compassion for everybody else's second chakra. But as long as you're supposed to have a second chakra that does this, or I'm supposed to have this, or I should have my seventh chakra be more creative, or be more whatever it is, it's like, no, yours works the way it works. Mine works that way. And it's, I wouldn't trade, I mean, like Mike said, I wouldn't ask you to do what I do for anything. But I will, because I'm born to do this work, I've done a whole shitload of stuff that I can tell you really works. For a lot of people, but my favorites are these.
And
you
know, so,
and you got to find your favorites.
And right. So that core place is the core, it's the hara, it's the secret place, it's when the bowls play, and we have to feel that, and then I call it memorizing or cultivating that feeling in the body and keep going back to it and practicing it. So that's home base, as opposed to having the blindfold on waiting for the next assault. It's like, you know, Reese is going to get up there and share the download, and it's like we're all over here waiting for the noose to hang him. It's like, you know, no, that's not reality.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to hang you.
Don't mess with my world. And that's the problem with creative people. It's like I just had, you know, and the problem is that I teach you how it is, and then I tell you it's now it's better or different. Or it's like there's now you have to take what you've learned and upgrade it. And most people are just happy with the downgrade. And it's like I'm just barely getting this. Don't make me go to this next level. But if you're going to work with me, you've got to stay on the, you know, there's a fast train we're running on. So
we speak of favorite things. Could we do some bioenergetics?
I'm sure. Yeah. Let's actually do the life purpose line.